Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time World Cup TV spectator.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that tends to wonder what lurks in the back of a dark closet or under our beds. So it's only fitting that we like to watch movies that try to evoke similar kinds of experiences. We'll tackle three movies that do so in different manners. First, we'll follow a couple of people who battle a strange non-government organization while trying to make contact with, well, let's just say that E.T. wants them to phone home. Following that, we'll look at Curry Barker's study of Love Gone Wrong titled Obsession and Kane Parsons' trek into a bizarre underground world titled Back Rooms. Let's begin with a bit of out-of-this-world wonder. Among the many mysteries of life that Steven Spielberg has explored, he's probably most famous for his work with extraterrestrials. That's certainly the case with Disclosure Day, his latest release, and the kind of movie that boosts the energies of those fueled by the conspiracy theory that aliens have reached Earth's shores. Ooh, kids, scary. Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor star as two seemingly random people who are key to a presumed alien presence, while Coleman Domingo plays their would-be enabler and Colin Firth, heading up a shady non-governmental agency, their antagonist. As always, Spielberg's technical work, scene framing, camera movement, pacing, and cinematography by Janusz Kamiński are pitch perfect. And the acting, especially by Blunt, is good as well. The problem is a storyline, credited both to Spielberg and David Koepp, that jumps the shark early and races headlong into the artistic depths of abject silliness.
Okay, Fonzie, I'm going to have to pause you right there. Can you explain what you mean by jump the shark? Because it might be a phrase that everyone doesn't know, but can you explain it? And also how, maybe you don't want to spoil things with this one.
Yeah,
today,
I don't.
But what you mean by that in relation to this movie?
All I'm going to say is that there's a point in which the movie, I fell out completely from what the
You're with it. You're with it.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden,
you introduce something.
What? Are you kidding me?
So bizarre.
Oh, come on, please. We've been going all this way for that, and then it just got worse.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's what I mean.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Yes. So when Fonzie jumped the shark, it
yes.
was like, we did not need that.
Well, I guess it depends on whether or not you thought it was cool that Fonzie jumped a shark. I kind of thought it was a little bit cool.
Okay.
You were a zygote at that time, too.
That's a discussion for another day. Anyway, back to Spielberg. I was thinking all the way through Disclosure Day that so many blockbusters today, especially in the post-Marvel cinematic universe era that we're in, can't keep a straight face. They're always undercutting their dialogue with jokes. They're trying way too hard to be clever or metatextual. And so I do appreciate the fact that good old Steven Spielberg's still out there and he's committed to earnestness no matter the cost. I mean, it doesn't always work, but he's still trying to make us feel genuine, wide-eyed wonder. And there are some jokes, I guess, in this movie or lines of dialogue that are supposed to get laughs out of us.
There is a sense of humor, yes.
But for the most part, this is a very straight-faced movie. And I have to say that I was with Disclosure Day for quite a while because it practically starts mid-sprint.
Yep.
And it's throwing a ton of exposition and supporting characters at us. And I was just having fun trying to keep up with its breakneck pace. And then there's this fantastic scene near the beginning where the Emily Blunt character, she's a TV meteorologist, and she's just assumed these powers that I guess the aliens have bestowed upon her. And she's going into work, and from the front door of the TV studio to her on-camera mark, she's sort of using all these powers. And it's just a thrilling piece of visual storytelling. And there are neat little set pieces throughout Disclosure Day that really feel like vintage Spielberg, especially 80s Spielberg. There's one involving a car that gets stuck under the wheels of a train. There's another one involving an invisible house that had a lot of comic pratfalls in it. But I think that this screenplay by Koepp and based on a story by Spielberg, I think it's just ultimately overcomplicated and it's cluttered up with all this stuff. I mean, I just don't think there is a solid through line that pulls us from beginning to end in the same way that some of Spielberg's great extraterrestrial movies
over-explanation. And sometimes there are things like, Where did this come from? What are the motivation of these characters? Why these two people? There's less that meets the eye.
Yeah, well, and it's like you don't need to over-explain those things because mystery is always more intriguing than fact, at least in terms of these kinds of movies. But there are so many things that happen in the third act of Disclosure Day, which I won't disclose myself, where I just thought, I guess I don't really understand how we got here. I don't understand why they're doing the things that they're doing. And besides that, the entire crux of this story, that there's documented proof of alien life, that the disclosure of this proof would make us, the human race, rethink our place in the universe. It rang really hollow to me. I mean, it feels like something that would be in one of those 50s sci-fi films that Spielberg loves. But in 2026, I'm thinking, it didn't scan. It didn't
scan. And I wasn't sure what the meaning of alien life on Earth or come to Earth was supposed to signify. I mean, at least to my way of thinking, because I would have been like, oh, cool, you know, let's find out more or whatever, because you know how I feel about aliens generally. But that's why this didn't work for me. I mean, I agree with you. I thought the beginning was really good. I loved when she does her on the air sort of breakdown or shift. I also love the fact that these British actors such as Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor are playing these like sort of quintessential American, you know, characters.
And Eve Hewson, a.k.a. Bono's daughter, is O'Connor's girlfriend. She's Irish, but another non-American.
Right, exactly.
Colin Firth is the antagonist. He's obviously British.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that a movie that's dealing with the supernatural necessarily needs to follow a real-world logic. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't know if this movie ever establishes a logic and then follows it from beginning to end.
Well, right, because we have Vortex or whatever, the evil corporation.
Right.
But is it really? I mean, and then we have the government, and then we have these, two specially gifted people. And so are they for the good? I mean, so there's no real, to my way of thinking, there was no real antagonist, if that makes sense.
Not really.
And I like more of that sort of storyline where we're not sure. I mean, here we're not sure who's who. And even at the end, I was like, I don't know.
And there doesn't necessarily even need to be an antagonist because I don't know if there is
one. I love me a good antagonist.
But I don't know if there is one in, say, Close Encounters. I mean, there kind of isn't one in E.T. I mean,
there is one in E.T. because they're searching for it. This movie is most closely aligned
to. Yeah, but at the end of E.T., the menacing government agents, you know, I mean, it's not like they're the good guys or anything, but they're not the big, bad, evil,
and that
corporation
was,
like this
that
one
that movie
is
was
to be.
Developed enough so that it felt believable, though, I mean, come on, this is a guy who's made movie about dinosaurs being cloned and brought back to life, and it felt real.
Yeah.
Disclosure Dale did not feel real in the total.
Yeah, it seemed to me Much Ado About Nothing. That was my problem.
But despite that, there's a whole lot going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it just needed a little pruning, and maybe there would have been something here. I was also thinking a lot about the Colman Domingo character who you mentioned, because he's mostly on the phone with Josh O'Connor and occasionally with Emily Blunt. He's kind of directing them, go here, try this. Meanwhile, in the background, he's building something or he's overseeing the construction of something. It looks like he's in a sound stage.
Yeah.
And the entire time I kept thinking, is he supposed to be like an avatar for Spielberg himself?
That's what I wondered too.
He's like the director of the picture. But I don't know if that's a clear parallel. I don't know what it was exactly trying to say.
And that particular sequence that you're discussing, we find out that it's going to put the Emily Blunt character, take her back in time. And I wasn't really sure exactly what that was supposed to demonstrate.
Really.
I mean, it was kind of cool, but why?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of effort for something that might have happened naturally anyway.
Before we wrap up, let's talk about the acting. I thought Blunt was perfect.
Yeah, she's really good.
I mean, this is a woman who jumped out in the first The Devil Wears Prada. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I thought, oh God, this woman, I hate this character. She's not going to be anything. And yet she's turned out to be an A-list actress. And she's really quite good.
She's the best thing in the movie. And I also want to call out Janusz Kaminski's cinematography.
Yep.
I've seen mixed responses to it because it is so showy. I mean, the camera's always doing something. It's pushing it on the actors' faces. It's swooping around them. It's craning above them. But I liked the look of this movie
absolutely.
A lot. I mean, the composition and the movement of Disclosure Day gives the movie momentum when mm-hmm. I think the story is flagging.
I totally agree.
And we've said repeatedly, you know, just like with docs, you got to find a good subject. Just like with narrative films, there has to be some storyline that people can appreciate. And that just kind of jumped the shark.
Right. So you were listening to our discussion of Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Curry Barker's Obsession and Kane Parsons' Back Rooms. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When so much is happening in the world, who can you count on to tell you what really happened and why it matters? Old Fashioned Reporting, weekdays on Morning Edition from NPR News.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss Steven Spielberg's feature, Disclosure Day. Let's now turn to another couple of treks into the weird. Curry Barker's Obsession and Kane Parsons' Back Rooms. Let's begin with a look at a guy who wants love and gets far more than he bargained for. One of the surprising stories of the movie season, Obsession, was written, directed, and edited by YouTube sensation Barker, which says something about how today's popular filmmakers are finding their paths into the business. Michael Johnston stars as Bear, a timid guy whose attraction to his work colleague, Nikki, played by Indy Navarrete, is both encouraged and at the same time restrained by his BFF Ian, played by Cooper Tomlinson. Things change when Bear buys a novelty toy, a one-wish willow, and suddenly all his dreams come true. Until, of course, the dream becomes a nightmare. Barker is a facile filmmaker, and Obsession lives up to the meaning of its title. What effect it has on you, though, likely will depend on your attitude both about black magic and graphic violence.
Let me begin by saying I love this movie. I unexpectedly love this movie because, you know, I'm not necessarily into this particular horror genre. But for some reason, the underlying theme of this intrigued me in various ways. As Dan explained, I want to set the stage a little bit more. We have these four friends who work in this music store. Now, the interesting thing about the music store, there are never any customers. And so the four of them are just hanging out. So it's not really, they don't really have a job. They sort of have each other. And we find out early on that our protagonist, Bear, has a crush on Nikki, but she is not interested in him. Instead, he should be looking to his other coworker, Sarah, who does seem interested in him, but he's either too clueless or too shy or whatever to notice this. So he decides, you know, that he's going to win over Nikki's favor because she lost a necklace. And so he's going to try to, they have a brief liaison. He's going to try to get her a gift that replicates this necklace. And that's when he goes into this store, which is the funniest setting in and of itself. I mean, it sort of looks like, you know, one of those stores like Boo Radley's that has all these different things happening. But he finds this monkey's paw type thing that allows him to sort of put a spell on her. And that's not what he originally intended to do. But bottom line is she becomes obsessed with him because that's what he wished for when he broke this willow thing.
He says, I want her to love me more than anyone in the world.
Correct.
Something like that.
And be careful what you wish
that's
for
right.
is absolutely the adage here. And I thought that Indy Navarrete was brilliant. I mean, because she sort of, we see her at the beginning, we see her shift into this character who becomes extremely obsessed, like think Fatal Attraction on steroids. And she pulls that off. And then occasionally she'll like dip back into her former self. And so to be able to pull this off, I thought really was brilliant. The storyline is not that complicated, but overall, I really like this. And then we can talk a little bit more about Curry Barker's previous work, which I also know a little bit about.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the concept of the monkey's paw, because that's basically what obsession is. You make a wish that serves yourself without thinking about the implications on anyone else. And I think the brilliance of the premise here, and I think why it has become such a runaway hit. I mean, this movie came out like 2 months ago and it's still doing, you know,
in
huge
the theaters.
Money. Yeah. But Nikki, the Indy Navarrete character, and I agree, it's a brilliant performance. She is framed visually as the monster, as the villain of the piece, because she's always in shadow. She's lurking in the background in shallow focus. She's got all these weird movements that happen. But she's not the villain of the story. Bear is the villain of the story. He's the one that puts all this horrible stuff into motion. And he's the one that's essentially...
Or maybe his friend Ian.
Maybe. But he's essentially the one that has,
right,
you know, trapped her in this way. And so I think that's why it is resonating with audiences, because it's tapping into this idea of the nice guy who has,
right,
you know, bad implications or, you know,
and I think we need to be
motives.
Clear about a couple of things. One, it's very violent. And
yeah.
So I guess I'm just kind of a nerd
to
the violence. But yeah, especially toward the end, it just goes over the top. But I wanted to mention Curry Barker's previous effort, and this is the only thing I know about him. He had this YouTube hit. It's about an hour long, and it's called Milk and Cereal, not like the breakfast food. And it's a series of pranks that sort of get increasingly more horrifying and spooky. It's a found footage type of film, and I love pranks myself. So I had seen this, and don't get any ideas, guys. Okay, just saying. But so at that point, he made that little YouTube thing for under $1,000, and it really is – he had some good acting, and it had a good premise. And so I'm really curious to see what Curry Barker does next, because I think he definitely is a talent.
That was our discussion of Curry Barker's Obsession. Let's now turn to a film that began as a popular YouTube series. Another well-known YouTuber, Kane Parsons, at just age 20, parlayed his Backrooms online series into a feature film starring a couple of acting heavyweights, both past Oscar nominees, the British-born Chiwetel Ejiofor and Norway's Renate Reinsve. Ejiofor stars as Clark, the owner of a discount furniture store, while Reinsve is his therapist, Mary. When Clark discovers a secret world behind a mysteriously fluid wall and goes missing, Mary goes looking for him. The world they both end up in is creepy, and when it delves into dark corners, feels truly and claustrophobically frightening. But when Parsons offers up at least a partial explanation for what is going on, that feeling slowly but gradually dissipates.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I assumed when they were expanding these short videos into a feature, Backrooms, I thought that they were going to way over explain what was going on. And I thought they gave just enough detail that I still kind of walk away not really knowing why the thing is there, but sort of understanding what it's supposed to represent, especially with these two characters. And I think it's interesting to pair Backrooms with Obsession, not just because they blew up and made tons of money, but because I kind of have similar admirations and criticisms of them, because I think both of these movies, as you mentioned, MP, with Obsession, have really tight, simple premises. And I think both of them are a little too long for those premises. I think both of these movies could have been tightened up, especially in their middle acts. By the time Chiwetel Ejiofor was wandering into what seemed like the 100th back room, I thought, I think I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the production design of this movie, the cinematography of this movie, I mean, it looks immaculate. And this
the
idea
sound too.
Of
the sound is amazing.
Yeah, and the music, which Kane Parsons co-composed, this idea of liminal spaces, as they call it, or, you know, impossible architecture. As I was watching Backrooms, I was thinking, you know, a lot of my dreams, at least the ones that I can remember, exist in places like this, where I'm kind of wandering through a place and it just doesn't make any logical sense. And I've never really seen it quite captured in a movie like it is here. And, you know, it's dealing with this theme of holding on to things cramming them into a spare room, a metaphorical spare room, mm-hmm. although it does become literal instead of actually dealing with them. And there's a scene near the end of Backrooms that really goes off the rails in a way that I found kind of unexpectedly delightful. And I think, you know, if you want to talk about jumping the shark, that's a moment that I think, and you know, you'll know the scene I'm talking mm-hmm. about. That's the part where I think some people might lose them, but it's where I thought, okay, this guy's got something. And so I do like both of these. I think I like Obsession more, but I am encouraged that both of these films, as original and fresh as they are doing so well at the box office. It's nice to see.
I agree. I agree that Obsession to me was the better effort, even though, let's face facts, this movie benefits from having these A-list actors in it, for sure. I'm not sure that I completely appreciated the therapist, patient, you know, sort of overlay of what was happening
and
here.
And the therapist has her own baggage that
yes, exactly, you know, she's exactly. working through. But I would have cut out a little bit here because you're dealing with this pretty much a static set. I mean, it evolves, but at the same time, I did get a little, not bored, that wouldn't be right. I thought it was a little tedious about two-thirds of the way through. And then, as you said, it shifts a little bit.
I think we should point out that both these films have portions of them that include found footage. And what I will say about both these movies is, in terms of Obsession, what I came away with and what will stay with me forever is Indy Navarrete, the expressions on her face. Mm-hmm. And in terms of Backrooms, it's just the vision of those hallways, this yellow and the sound, the ambient sound. That's creepy. Creepy as hell.
And hey, so now I know what to do in the future if I want to like.
That's a future prank for you. And by the way, right. Disclosure Day also has found footage in it that I won't spoil. So, you know, accidental trilogy here.
That's right. And that was our discussion of Kane Parsons' film Backrooms. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day and Curry Barker's Obsession. Let's take this moment to thank our new director, Aaron Weir, for de-engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the actor Sean Delaney. Between two voids, there's a mystery, and we call it life. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.